Welcome to ACMN Conversations, a podcast about media, marketing and the arts. Today's guest is no stranger to podcasts, working at Mamma Mia, one of the leading organisations who create audio content. Please welcome Jackie Capel.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Thanks, Jackie. I'll give you a little intro so people know why we've targeted you for today. So Jackie is a passionate content creator, a social media expert and heads up the Mamma Mia social agency. If there's something to know about utilising content and social media to tell your brand story, this is the lady you want to talk to, and it's the lady we wanted to talk to. So we were lucky enough to get some time with her for a chat on ACMN Conversations. So I thought, as we always do, we'd like to start with a bit of a summary of your career to date, just so we've got some context of where and how you discovered your love of content and social.
Well, great. Well, look, like a lot of people, I actually started in the traditional media landscape as a media planner and buyer. So I used to trade TV through the online system. I used to book outdoor posters, book print, magazines, and that was really how I came into the media industry. But I suppose along the way, I started to, notice this area of social media. So I actually remember very clearly the first time Facebook was actually discussed in the office. I was working at OMD on the Telstra account at the time, and the digital team were basically racing around the office telling everyone, look at this, look at Facebook, we can all now get on Facebook. And literally everyone in the whole building signed up to Facebook on that one day. And that's the first moment I started thinking, there's something in this social media thing. It just fascinates people. So from that point on, I always had a view to the role of social media in the media plans that I was developing. And I sort of steadily moved into more strategic and content focused roles from there. Finally moving into the role that I'm in today, which is the GM of Social Squad at Mamma Mia.
Yeah, great, which we do want to hear a little bit more about, but I think it is fascinating and makes a lot of sense that someone understands the power of media buying to then take that leap into whether it's organic, social or any derivative thereof. I think it's such a sensible pathway because you've got to understand that paid traditional media and how it kind of converts into this new world.
I definitely think it gives me a different perspective on social media from some who have, I suppose, just grown up completely natively with social as, a given part of the conversation. I've been able to see the impact paid social has, as well as the impact organic social has, almost as that's grown separately. So, yeah, I do think I have a bit of a unique perspective on that front, actually.
Yeah, I like it. So tell us a bit more about your role with Social Squad. I mean, we know it to be the in-house social media agency of Australia's content powerhouse, Mamma Mia. What do you know it to be?
Well, and look, I think the most interesting thing about what we're able to do at Social Squad is that because we're a part of the Mamma Mia media network, essentially, you know, we're a part of Australia's number one women's media brand for social engagement. You know, I think we're probably one of the most engaging social communities in Australia. And, you know, to be able to sort of take that DNA, I suppose, all of those 13 years of testing and learning what women share most on social, why they share it, this creative bench that we have sat in the business as well, who are all pointed towards social engagement, and actually give clients a little bit of a spoonful of that secret sauce, I suppose. You know, there's very few propositions from a social point of view that can combine success with your own channel in social and actually sharing that with a client's own channel. And I think that's what really makes us unique, essentially. It's in our DNA and we create that thumb-stopping content and we've been doing it every day for as long as social media's been around, basically. Just now we can help you with that too.
I just think Mamma Mia is a terrific organisation. It's so visionary in terms of taking media into this audio world, but that two-way traffic as well through social. Yeah, we just love everything that you do. And of course, in our world, you're a great connector to our audiences. So, keep up the good work. We love it. Let's talk more about content. I mean, it's just so central to any marketing strategy now. Maybe give us your take on the power or the importance of content.
I think I probably want to start answering this question with a few quick stats that I think kind of frame it up in context. So within the Mamma Mia group, we do a lot of first-party research with our audience and just, you know, general brand qualitative, quantitative studies. And one area that we research in quite a lot of depth is social engagement with our audiences. And the most recent survey results that we have back indicate, I think there's about 47% of internet users are spending longer in their social media channels right now. And that's equivalent to about a 4 percentage point increase in social media app usage. And that's across everyone in Australia, no matter their age, no matter their demographic. Everyone is spending more time in social apps and doing more in their social apps as a result, essentially. You know, the number of Australians using TikTok surged by more than 50% in the first half of 2020. That's going to be a lot higher now. You know, the fact is that people are using social to connect in ways that have really caught up to the whole rest of the marketing funnel across traditional channels. You really can go end to end in terms of the way that people are kind of utilizing social media in their everyday lives. But the big, I suppose, watch out in all of this is it's very easy to get excited about the potential for social media for your brand, maybe from a paid perspective, might feel very efficient, for example, from a CPM point of view. But there's sometimes a clash between the type of content we know consumers want to see in their feeds and the kind of objectives that brands have. You know, brands want sales and they want to collect the customer data, right? But people want to connect with other people. And sometimes there's a disconnect there. So we try to apply, I suppose, a standard principle when it comes to what content we want to put out in the world from a social squad point of view. We like to ask ourselves this question: is it original, is it human, or is it useful? And if it can't qualify against one of those three factors, then it really shouldn't go live, either as a paid ad or a piece of organic content, essentially.
I love that. Original, human, or useful. Mm. Yeah, it's so on point, isn't it?
I think there's another bit of research that kind of backs that up, I suppose. I think on average about 32% of all generations, that goes from kind of Gen Z right through to baby boomers, say that funny or entertaining content is their main reason for using social media. And that sort of translate right through to driving purchase as well. So if it has some kind of a hook that's original, you know, something new or different that they've never encountered before that really intrigues them, you know, or it might be human. Does it make them laugh, cry, think, you know, feel something real? Or is it useful? Does it just tell them how to do something they didn't know how to do before or give them a piece of advice that's really important to their life? You know, then you know that you're kind of qualifying for their attention, I suppose. And there's a lot of research that backs that up. You know, WARC, the World Advertising Research Council, I believe, they run a branded content awards program every single year. And that original human useful concept is something that I've gleaned from reading through those awards papers every year. So what campaigns are winning the most effective content campaigns every year? Those seem to be the three factors that really kind of exist in all of those kind of top campaigns. Yeah.
Yeah. And from what you're saying, like what's really, I'm really hearing is it's just way more meaningful. It's just got a real sense of, yeah, of meaning or purpose to it. So yeah. Of course it's going to impact somebody a bit more.
And I think that that's really interesting in terms of the idea of what a piece of content is, if it's meaningful. We're not necessarily saying it has to be all three of those things, you know. Mm-hmm. As long as it's just one and does that really well, then you're going to engage your audience. You're going to kind of kick that goal, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, people say, "Oh, look, we're a bank or we're a insurance company or whatever that might be. How do we do something original or human, useful maybe, you know, but how do we do something?" It's like, you know what? Human can mean so many different things. You don't have to try to be funny if you're not a funny brand, but you can try to be real and honest and, you know, slice of life. There's so many other ways that you can kind of interpret that instead of just trying to pursue a single idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And that leads me a little bit on to, and you've alluded to it already, around the purpose or objective. And that's obviously a really important starting point to any marketing strategy. But I think it just becomes so much more important when you look at purpose or objective in the lens of content and social media. So what's your take on how to tackle that?
I think because there are tactics and products that allow you to impact all areas of the marketing funnel in social media. So, you know, do you want reach, engagement, or conversion? There's a bit of a tendency to see investment in paid social, and I'm particularly thinking of Facebook here, as a bit of a panacea, I suppose, for all of your marketing ills. And there's a tendency towards a bit of a one-size-fits-all social strategy, I find. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's paid social strategies that are appropriate for most major marketing goals, but they are different strategies because social media is not a monolith. It's a collection of various different channels, various different audiences and micro audiences who all have different behaviours and motivations behind their content consumption, you know, different languages and memes even that they're using within their particular channels. So, you know, pointing a single tactic and a single strategy at all of that audience may not be right. It's about being single-minded into the community that you're trying to penetrate. You know, what do you want to ask of them? And how are you best going to drive that behavior? So if you think about what is your single-minded objective, harnessing that clarity can give you a really strong outcome. So do you want a really loyal community of vocal fans or advocates, or do you actually just need a weekly one-plus reach to drive a volume of awareness, you know, for your sales funnel, essentially? There is no one tactic in social that will give you both. I think we'd all love to find it. It doesn't exist. And so the most common thing I find is people trying to use paid tactics to achieve organic outcomes and people trying to use organic tactics to achieve, you know, reach and distribution outcomes, essentially. So that would be my kind of key point around that is, you know, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. You know, thinking paid, owned, shared, and earned as each a separate kind of bucket of your social strategy is really going to give you the best outcome, I think, there. Yeah.
And I love that single-minded objective because I think it's just a bottomless pit of ideas and opportunities. So I think refining that to a single-minded objective makes lots of sense. Do you find over the arc of a campaign for social in particular, you're adjusting that single-minded objective and just doing something a little bit different at different phases? How do you kind of tap into all of that opportunity without losing your core purpose, I guess?
Yeah, it's really, really easy to move the goalposts in a social campaign, I feel. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a dashboard of rich information at your fingertips, and it is easy to go down optimization routes that feel appropriate at the time, but maybe do drive you away from your initial single-minded path or objective that you had. So it's really, really important to, on any report or analytics you're looking at, for example, if you are pursuing an optimization goal through paid or even through a change in organic tactics, that you are always referring back to the core KPI of your investment before you dive into an optimization journey, essentially. Take advantage of the flexibility of the social channel, but don't let it lead you down a rabbit hole, essentially.
Yeah, great tip, great advice. And just moving on to audience, which again you've touched on a little bit, but I think when you invest time into creating content, knowing that audience is just so critical. How do you factor that into your ideas and solutions?
Yeah, audience is amazing. The social media ecosystem never fails to amaze me. I find something quirky and strange and new and unusual every time I explore a new channel. And there's always a subculture around that that you never knew existed. There's this trend of it's like a two-speed economy in social, essentially. everyone's on it, but everyone's doing something different on it. And that's difficult, right? You know, you can be everything to everyone, or you can be everything to kind of a smaller group and work really hard on that. And do you know what? I suppose there's benefit in both approaches depending on what kind of business you are. But I think it can become a challenge to use traditional target audience thinking in the social media space because someone doesn't necessarily conform to their demographic when they're acting in a social media capacity. People have their interest-based identities. They have their geographic-based identities. And they might have a demographic or a life stage based identity. And those three things might be really quite different in social. So having a really in-depth understanding of that multi-identity person who is your target audience in social is, I think, the most difficult part about the channel, actually.
Yeah, it's not that simple anymore, is it? Like, you're not really just a Gen Xer, you know, you might be on the edges of that age demographic wise, but perhaps you've got a mindset or a behavior that takes you into another section. It's just very, very, it's a web. It's just such a web finding those audiences. Cause as you say, it's age, it's geography, it's interests, it's the whole gamut.
It could really be a combination of a variety of factors that might not even be top of mind for you as a brand that are influencing someone's behaviors in social. So that's why things like, you know, social listening, qualitative audience research to actually understand what value they're getting out of social channels and those kind of tactics is incredibly important. And I think it's so easy in social to concentrate your attention on very basic metrics when you're doing your initial planning and, you know, budget allocation. So, for example, Facebook is the largest channel by volume. So for a lot of people, there's an assumption that it should be the cornerstone or, you know, the lion's share of their social strategy. And you see a lot of businesses relying heavily on Facebook because, well, they already have a Facebook page. That's really easy, right? It's a channel that feels native to the people running the marketing program, potentially. You know, there's a little bit of that at play, right? But it feels like it's a simple win and it's pay to play. But when you look at the time spent by social channel instead of just the pure penetration, Instagram and TikTok are seriously overtaking in-app usage for many audiences, and not just at the very youngest end of the spectrum either. So that time and attention piece becomes more important than simple penetration in the channel, I think.
Yeah.
And a big watch out that we kind of have that conversation with clients, pardon me, quite a lot.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm going to hit you up on some metrics stuff, a little later in our chat. I wanted to just move on now. Like, we've talked about purpose and objective or single-minded objective. We've kind of identified our audience. So hypothetically, we're kind of ready to go. Give us your top, I don't know, four tips around how you would tackle this and just like getting that content out there.
I think my first tip, which is actually some wording that I stole from the broader Mamma Mia business because I thought it just absolutely encapsulated what we're trying to do. It's walk in their shoes.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to design a piece of content to drive an action or a change in behavior or a perception, you need to put yourself in the seat of the person who is going to be receiving it and think about what it adds to their life and what is the value exchange there. It's not going to be as simple as, oh, we have this hot deal or this hot offer. There's so much more nuance at play when we're talking about social communication. So, yeah, how are you researching the audience? How are you asking people who are native in those social channels and have that expertise, you know, to essentially get a clearer picture of the customer beyond the numbers and into that kind of more psychographic landscape?
Yeah, I love that you said your first tip is walk in their shoes, because our most recent podcast before you was all about storytelling and the power of storytelling, and the number one takeout is think about your audience and walk in their shoes so that you actually come up with a story that people want to hear. So, yes, I love that's your first tip. Sorry, carry on.
No problem. I think my second tip is understand that social media is a cycle, not a line. So within social media marketing, there's a lot of talk of the funnel, but there's no such thing as a funnel in social. It's mm-hmm. always a circle. It's always a cycle. Everyone at the end of the funnel who's making a purchase is a potential reach amplifier for your next campaign. And it's some brands do it amazingly well. I would call out brands like ASOS. There's a lot of beauty brands who do a fantastic job at this, for example, because they just understand this. An advocating customer is the most powerful ad in social that you can have.
In our world, it's, you know, fan reviews work so hard for us. It's so important that that's a part of our campaign now, and we work out ways to amplify our fan reviews. It's so important.
Someone who's had a great experience of your product, it adds that human element as well. There's just something about, and this is the whole reason why influencer marketing works, right? Mm. It's like a combination of a friend giving you a friendly piece of advice, a recommendation, a promotional brand piece, and those two things together just have so much power. I find it really incredible and exciting as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Sorry, I keep interrupting. Back to your tip.
No, fine. My next tip is amplify. I couldn't think of a fancier way to say that, basically, but you know, so much content is crafted with love and care and time and expense and energy and relationships built to deliver this content. You see this in influencer marketing all the time. And then maybe 30 people see it. And there's no reason for that to ever have to happen. There is a absolute plethora of paid amplification solutions in pretty much any social channel with any scale. Make the most of them, use them. There is no problem with taking the reach of a piece of content beyond its organic capability into a broader but still relevant audience. You can still use all of the targeting capability as you would on any Facebook ad. Just because it's something that's lived in your feed first, or maybe lived as an organic piece first, its second life as a paid piece of content is where it's going to add 90% of its value, essentially.
Yeah, here. We see that often, that, yeah, there's so much time, effort, thought, dollars put into that content. So, pushing it out there is just so, so important.
The final piece of advice I have is just try something new as often as you can, within reason, of course, but there is a new thing to do, to try in social media every day. Find something that you want to make your 10% push, and make sure that there's always something new in your always on social plan every month. And that's how you're going to test, learn and grow. Some of our, we have Elevate vitamins as a client, you know, pregnancy vitamins. And some of our most effective always on tactics within their social feed are things that we tried because we saw a trend emerging on TikTok or something like that. And we just did our own fun version of it that was appropriate for the brand, thinking, oh, this might be a bit of a one-off, you know, just to be in the now. And they've become cornerstones of the monthly plan for always on.
Great case study. I mean, that is one thing about social I find a bit head spinning, is that there is always something new, and how do you not get bogged down or just misdirected, always sort of looking at the shiny new thing, but taking a little tiny piece of that and doing a little test. I guess, you know, it's great advice, because you can just see if it works, if it does, keep going. If it doesn't, park it, move on to the next shiny new thing, because in digital there's always going to be a shiny new thing.
Exactly right. You don't have to eat the whole social elephant all at once. Just take a tiny little bite every now and then.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, great tips. Thank you. And then we've touched on this as well, but sort of that, you know, $64 million question around measurability. What are some of the media metrics that you rate, or things that you value around measuring brand impact?
I do actually think that reach is an undervalued social metric, which you might sound a bit counterintuitive, because I know in the traditional kind of media and marketing landscape, or, you know, the non-social media marketing landscape, it really is that kind of hero metric, but it gets a lot less airtime, I suppose, in social planning circles. And nothing beats, you know, a great percentage of your target audience being given the opportunity to engage with your content.
So I
would hero reach, absolutely. You know, example, a well-planned influencer campaign should be able to compete on reach with any broadcast TV campaign for the same budget against that target audience. There's no reason for it to under-deliver on reach versus a traditional broadcast buy, with the right tactics in place.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. It's quite fascinating. And it's like we've got this new thing called social media, so we wanted to measure it differently. But really, media is about eyeballs. So if you've got a tool that gives you eyeballs for your brand, as long as it's targeted to your audience, then it's got a place, right?
Exactly. I mean, engagement is definitely something that still has to be a part of the conversation. And for many brands, it will be the primary conversation in that channel, because they're in the effort of building consideration and building community. And that's great. But again, you know, if engagement rate is key, you do again have to consider tactically what's going to work to highlight that particular tactic. So, you know, it's one of the reasons why we don't solely focus on the largest macro influencer talent in market, for example. You know, a smaller influencer with a smaller fan base tends to have significantly higher engagement against their smaller fan group. It could be 2, 3, even 4 times higher than someone in that large macro tier, just because the metrics work in their favor and they have a more one-to-one interaction with their fans. So people in that kind of 20 to 50,000 follower mark, for example, from an influencer perspective, can tend to drive very strong engagement results. So again, it's kind of knowing where to fish for your objective as well, a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, that's really helpful. Thank you. Now, I know you've got some myths to bust around content marketing. Do you want to share some of them with us today?
No, absolutely. This is the one I hear over and over and over again, that it's a soft lever. Social media is good for brand affinity or engagement. Social content is being, you know, is being used only for these kind of top or kind of mid-tier, not very pointy outcomes. And I know I just spoke about that, but the truth is, in the e-commerce world, social content is being used by the smartest brands to drive their commercial outcomes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So on Facebook and Instagram right now, I think there's about $16 billion just on those two platforms being spent on shopping annually through direct conversions from those channels. $16 billion. And bit of a question, I suppose, I had just back to you, Lyndall. Do you think Australia is behind or ahead of the world in terms of transacting on social?
Wow, okay. I like to think that we're quite forward thinking, but then I do think about countries that have got huge populations. I'm going to say ahead.
Well, you're right. That's awesome. The average Aussie spends, I think, $860 annually, more than the global average on social media transactions.
They're such shoppers.
Yeah, we love shopping through social, and 20% of people in Australia consider a purchase every single time they scroll in a social feed.
You know what? I'm going to confess, in this little lockdown, each time I've looked at social and there's been something in my feed, I've thought that would come in handy. Those leggings with the wool on the inside, they would come in handy for running in Melbourne in winter.
Exactly right. We have just embraced social commerce, and I think the consumer is in some cases maybe a little bit ahead of some of the kind of business world in Australia in terms of their adoption of that. So I just think it's a really interesting dynamic. You know, Instagram is just this huge impulse purchase driver, to your point, across so many categories. So that's myth one, is that social's a soft lever. No, it can be used as a pointy e-commerce tool. It directly drives sales, and that's what Australians want from the platform.
We haven't touched on the changes with Apple and Facebook and reporting, but for us, Facebook and Instagram sells tickets. We absolutely see conversions off the back of those platforms.
Yeah, I cannot agree more. I think, again, it's just not about, it's about that single-minded objective piece, isn't it? If your objective is to sell your product to the audience through social, it just influences your tactics a bit, but there's no reason not to put your eggs in that basket, yeah, I suppose.
Definitely.
The other myth I had to bust is that influencer marketing is flimsy or shallow or not worth it, I suppose. It's really, really easy to kind of dump on influencer marketing a little bit. It's become a little bit fashionable to do that. But people forget, I mean, influencer marketing in some form or another has been a fact of the media landscape since the 50s when soap operas were selling products and through their programs. You know, this whole idea of celebrity or personality endorsement is not new. It's just been scaled up and democratized a little bit, I suppose. Now anyone who has the purpose around it can get involved. You know, podcasters, social media influencers, they're just building these amazing parasocial relationships with their audiences. And it is so powerful, and it is becoming a really enormous, professionally driven, regulated industry in this country, and the benefits are there for brands who want to get on board. That's my other big myth I like to bust.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about influencer marketing and sort of where is that, and I guess to extend on everything that you've just said, which is really educational in that space, where do you think it's heading, and where should people put it in their social strategies now?
I think influencer marketing, in Australia, we're very focused on what I would describe as the brand partnership model. So, you know, endorsement in feed, essentially, of a product. We do have some brands pursuing a more commerce-driven approach to influencers, for example, affiliate marketing type models with influencers. And with some of the recent announcements from Instagram where they're going to build some of that functionality into the platform for creators, for example, for affiliate redemptions from brands, for example, so percentage cut per sale.
Is that the background to that new initiative?
Correct. Yeah, because at the moment, if you want to pay an influencer a small proportion of a fee for the sales that they drive directly, maybe through a unique code or a swipe up from their feed, for example, you kind of need to have the kind of tech capability built into either your CRM or in the back end of your website to do the fulfillment on that, essentially. Otherwise, it's super manual and you'll have people kind of not necessarily knowing how they're performing. So I think having a more standard solution for that in the Australian market will get a lot more influencers on board with that approach, because it's actually a very successful approach in other markets. And the influencer market across Asia, for example, is absolutely built on that kind of revenue sharing model, which we don't see very much of here in Australia, essentially. So I'll be interested to see where that goes. Yeah,
that's great insight. I would be interested to see where that goes too. Now we've kind of done a lot of the theory, haven't we, of that the world of social. Is there perhaps a case study where you've kind of done the strategy and delivered a content or social strategy that you could kind of talk us through? Maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. What did you learn?
I think one I'd like to highlight is actually Fantastic Furniture and their agency Bohemia, who are great partners of ours. So we're actually entering our third year of activation and partnership with that brand. Very proud of that partnership, really mutually beneficial, and it's driven some absolutely gorgeous, effective content outcomes. And essentially it was a really interesting one. So Fantastic Furniture have been on this amazing brand refresh journey. You know, they've got a gorgeous new logo, a really strong new kind of brand proposition in market, And social was a really important part of that transition and that journey. Essentially, one of the key things that Social Squad has kind of participated in with Fantastic Furniture was a program where they wanted to reach younger women or younger couples setting up their first home away from home, essentially. You know, it might be their first flat with their partner, share house living, for example, maybe their first ever office as well, if they're setting up a little side hustle, something like that. But it's just this idea of making nests is what we called it, you know, having that pride of creating your own space and making all of the calls for yourself for the very first time and capturing that excitement a little bit. So Bohemia came to Social Squad to test a variety of influencer tactics that kind of could resonate particularly authentically with that younger audience. So it's kind of it really is a Gen Z, maybe very young millennial kind of cusp audience, I suppose. And that's what we did, you know, across a 12-month period. We continued to accumulate new faces to the campaign and kept our friendly faces engaged across the whole time, and tested a variety of channels as well across social. So starting from that base of Instagram, we then expanded through YouTube, through Pinterest, through TikTok, and each channel we flexed the content ideation and the partnerships we had to really live in that channel very authentically. It's just been such an amazing campaign in terms of, you know, over delivery on content deliverables, incredible reach, and actually incredible website traffic outcomes from that as well. And what worked really was showcasing the product outside of a catalog setting.
Yeah, of course.
Even sometimes when it comes to the furniture category, even the social feed can feel like a catalog. Mm. You know? Yeah. So this was about real lives, the real homes of these young Australians, and what they were actually using the products for, showing a little creativity in how they were using the products. Maybe they weren't using them for their intended purpose, for example. We had some floor lamps that were used as bedside table lamps instead, and, you know, boxes turned upside down and used as desks and all sorts of interesting things. And essentially it was just a completely killer campaign across all of the metrics, and we're really, really proud of it. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. I'm going to go and look it up.
It's great fun, actually.
Fantastic furniture ads. Now, we recently had a great experience with Social Squad for Come From Away. I think, yeah, it was hugely successful from our point of view and the show's point of view. What were some of the highlights of that campaign from your perspective?
For me, it was just seeing how enthusiastic the talent were about the production. They, all of them, just put their all into those deliverables. It was really incredible. I think we had 5 talent, if I remember correctly, and they produced 56 pieces of content across 3 days, I think it was.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I think 31 of those were bonus deliverables.
Yes.
Which is just incredible. Yeah. Because they just loved the show, you know, and they wanted to share that with their fans. We had Kelly McCarran, one of our really amazing talents. She stayed up all night with the music from the show on, dancing around her living room, capturing stories of that as the night wore on. just that level of participation I love to see. And it was we drove a lot of clicks as well. I think we drove about, 15,000 clicks to the website in that short period, something.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't remember the metrics, but I think Come From Away, I mean, most of our products are this way, but Come From Away takes people's desire to engage with the product and the authenticity to a whole new level. So we do see that with that show for sure.
Yeah, it was just great. It was just great. It's one of our favourite campaigns so far this year, just because of the joy we all got from watching the deliverables as they came through.
Yeah, wasn't that good? And then while we're talking sort of great examples or great case studies, you've obviously had a really broad career, but what's just one piece of content that you've made that's really stuck out and why, I guess?
Can I tell you the story of the most difficult yet rewarding content campaign that I was ever running?
Please do. Yeah. The good stories come from a place of trouble and challenge. So yeah, share that one.
Many years ago, and I would probably describe this as one of my first full cross-platform, socially driven content campaigns that we ever planned and executed. But this was for Wild Turkey, actually, bourbon. And the campaign was called the Turkey 10. And we found 10 amateur sports teams from around Australia and sponsored them with professional grade gear, coaching. We brought cheerleaders and renter crowds and fireworks and helicopters to their local kind of running around the field kind of matches, and we captured the whole journey through social. They each got their own Turkey 10 supporter page across. This was in very much in the days of Facebook only, essentially. Yeah. Where we drove community around each of them, and essentially we were trying to get them from the bottom of the table to the top of the table.
That's a very clear trick, isn't it?
So they were essentially the battlers. That was the idea. They were teams that were kind of battling in their league and needed a bit of a leg up. We created some fantastic content with that. We partnered with actually Triple M on that one at the time as well as Facebook. And I don't think I've ever worked so hard on a campaign in my entire life.
That sounds so fun though.
It was a hit.
Yeah. Came up with some really special pieces there.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Jackie. There's just so many great little tidbits of guidance there. I think there's something for everybody in our chat today, because social media is not going anywhere. So we may as well get used to it and figure out how to really use it to our advantage. So thanks for sharing all those tips with us.
No problem. It's such a pleasure.
And we do like to take you into our world a little bit before we let you go. And so I just had a couple of extra questions if I can hit you with them. Just, some quick answers, I guess, on why does arts matter to you?
I think just without art, there isn't any change in the world, I suppose. Is that getting a bit lofty? I don't know.
Not at all. We've had some really beautiful answers to this, and the power of arts is a common theme and what it can actually do to the human spirit.
I think I studied drama for my HSC in high school, actually, and we had to study Bertolt Brecht as a part of that. And he has a great quote that I actually wrote an assignment about, and that's why it's kind of always stuck with me. But it's this idea of art isn't a mirror to reality, but a hammer with which you shape it, I believe is the quote, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I believe in that wholeheartedly. You know, it's not about art's not there to reflect ourselves back, but to show us actually what we could be and what we could be fighting against and for, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to look it up and we'll put it out when we actually do the post for this.
Please confirm if that's the correct quote, because I can't recall exactly, sorry.
I will. And where did you discover your love of live theatre?
Like I mentioned, I did study drama for my HSC. I did 2-unit drama. I didn't do that well, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't top of the class. But I used to perform in some local musicals and things like that when I was young as well. I was in the Arcadians in Wollongong, community theatre, so much fun. My career with them actually had a bit of an abrupt finish, unfortunately, because I did drop a whole tray of prop drinks and bottles into the orchestra pit in the middle of a performance at Camelot. And they all bounced off the drums and created a huge racket, and I got in enormous trouble. So I got my one breakout part taken away from me from Camelot. So that was a little bit of a finish to my theatre career.
But low point.
I've always loved it. I've always loved the theatre and performing as well.
Yeah. Oh, good. And just this is probably a leading question, because I know what you've seen lately, and also a bit of a strange question now that we're all back in lockdown again, but what's the best live theatre you've seen recently?
It was definitely Come From Away. I know I'm so biased, but it was so good. Oh, what a production. Like, if anyone has not seen that show yet, when we're able to get back out there again, please go and see it. It is just unlike anything I've ever seen in live theatre before. And that's, yeah, that's honest, my honest answer.
Yeah, it's a special one for sure. Mm. Oh, Jackie, thank you so much. I've had such a good time chatting with you today, and there's so much good content here. Content is king. So I can't wait to share it with all of our listeners. So thank you again very much for your time.
Thanks so much, Lyndall. It's been such a pleasure.